Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Dave. Here we are. Hello! December 20th, 2012. We have had such a ball this year. This is the last show for the year because I really do want to enjoy the holiday without prepping so much for the shows. It's been a real ball. And we're going to wrap things up in a sizable way today with the amazing Brian O'Neill. He's going to be with us next hour. If you are not familiar with the artistry of Brian O'Neill, that's one thing. You'll hear for yourself. But what Brian O'Neill symbolizes even more than the artistry is where he's coming from as far as humanitarian efforts. He has done so much as the creator of the Dew Foundation, named in honor of his grandmother, Daisy O'Neill, that it's just staggering. He really does want to eliminate homelessness in the USA and everywhere as far as he's concerned, but he's certainly striving in his hometown of Detroit, for sure, but he wants this goodwill to spread to the rest of the states, and we're going to try to help him. I can't think of a better guest to have today. So Brian's going to be with us next hour. We'll hear some Brian O'Neill music, and now we're going to hear a classic for you by McCoy Tyner on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thanks for being there. I kind of been waiting all season long to play that song. Just love that. Alexander O'Neill. Now, that might not necessarily ring a bell, if you will. I think of the Salvation Army right away when I say that. Ringing bells. Oh, my gosh. I've been hearing those folks all over the place, and thank God for them. Alexander O'Neill was, how big was he in the 1980s? My God. There was a song in the mid-1980s that will be in my head until the day I expire. If You Were Here Tonight, you remember that song? Or Saturday Love with Sherelle, real big on the R&B charts. And actually, going back to the early 80s, Alexander O'Neill was signed by Prince, yes, to be in the original Flight Time. The name of that group was changed to The Time, and Alexander O'Neill was replaced by Morris Day. Woo! Now, there are some that would disagree as to why that happened, but a couple of people say it's because Prince wasn't offering as much money as Alexander O'Neill thought he was worth. But as it turned out, Alexander didn't really need anybody because he did so well on his own. And actually, he is still doing his thing, not as much, but his website looks fairly active if you go to alexanderoneill.com. The name of the song right there is My Gift to You, and actually that was out in 1988, title track from a Christmas CD, and it's got that whole 80s vibe to it for sure. It's got Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis production all over it. And those two were also in Flight Time that became The Time. So they kept in touch with Alexander O'Neill. And if you want to pick up on some serious love songs, and actually that Christmas album, if you want to go back and remember the big hair days and all the clothes that we wore back in the 80s, you're going to be right back there. It's just amazing how music can catapult you back to a particular time, and in my case, decade, because there are several to choose from. Never mind. Chris Botti, we heard from as well, from December 2006. Isn't that amazing? It was 6 years ago. Wow. Winter Wonderland, as only Chris can do it. And I'm looking at the flyer or the insert that comes with the CD. And it's just, I was thinking today that he used to date Katie Couric. Did you know that? He did. I don't know what happened there, but it was Chris on trumpet, of course, on Winter Wonderland, and Billy Childs on piano, C.J. Vanston on organ, Anthony Wilson on guitar, David Carpenter on bass. And this album, seriously, is one of the best as far as meat and potatoes Christmas music. Honest to gosh, he's got Eric Benet on here, I Really Don't Want Much for Christmas, which is just wonderful. Bobby Columby did such a great job in production. And look, if you want to do something special and do a serious Christmas present for somebody this year, here is the best idea. Chris is in New York at the Blue Note through January the 6th. Yeah, I don't know what kind of deal he has with the Blue Note. Maybe there's not a whole lot of people who want to play because of their families around Christmas time. Chris doesn't have a family. He's not a married guy. He doesn't have kids. And he has no home, per se. So he'll take jobs when he can and live out of his suitcase. And just to see him, he channels all that warmth that you don't necessarily get when you meet him. He's an interesting guy. I really like him so much, but he's not initially warm to you. You have to warm up to him. And he was raised by his mom, and
was really close to her. I'm not sure if she's still living or not, but there is a sense of isolation you feel a little with him. And when he channels all the humanity and the warmth, it comes out in that trumpet. So when he puts on a show, it's mind-blowing, and you never know who's going to turn up. So consider that. Chris Bode at the Blue Note in New York through January the 6th, through Christmas, through New Year's. God bless his heart. McCoy Tyner, I'll Be Home for Christmas, started things off. I know I've played that before, but it's so awesome to hear that solo piano. God Rest Ye Merry Jazzmen, From Whence That Came. Now, that particular album was released in like 1981. At the time, there were real great jazz people that Columbia Records wanted to focus on. So they got a song apiece. Dexter Gordon, the Heath Brothers, the Arthur Blythe Quintet, Paquito de Rivera, Wynton Marsalis, and McCoy Tyner. So that is some really cool music, too. I just love the old stuff. There's nothing like it. There's some great new stuff, and you might hear a few of them today. Notably, I'm just going to tell you this ahead of time, so you don't roll around writhing in passion and Christmas spirit when you hear his voice, Kem. Okay? He has got a new Christmas album out, and I had to refresh myself a little bit. When I heard it, I had to open up the doors. It's like that. And Kem gets a little airplay today because of the fact that he and his really close friend, Brian O'Neill, have done such wonderful things together. And actually, Brian mentored Kem. He did. And nobody needed mentoring more than Kem back in the day. Quite a story. And maybe Brian will tell a little bit of that. But Brian's coming up in the next hour, and we're going to hear some more music in the meantime. And what would the holiday season be without playing this gentleman? What would we have done without Vince Guaraldi through the years? This is O Tannenbaum, O Christmas Tree, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you.
Me, honey, give Pearl something that'll be of some use to me, like a 5-pound box of money. Now, that little gift is loaded with lots of sentiment. See, whenever I get blue, Santa, I'm gonna think of you, but at the same time, I will change to pay my rent. You see, now money isn't everything. There's no two ways about it. But while we're here, Santa dear, it's much better with than without it. So, really, I could be real good and not do nothing funny. If you do like I ask you, start me right on Christmas night. Try me, try me. Try me on that money. Just try me, honey. Santa, can you hear me? You listen to everything I'm asking about? If I listen, honey, Santa dear, the new year, oh, it would be so bright and sunny. Just bring me that little simple thing I've been speaking to you about, like that, maybe a 5-pound box of money. That's all, that's all. It would be so heavenly and help me meet both ends. Yes, indeed. What old Pearl really needs is that 5-pound box of tin. How much can it weigh? I ask you, how much? I don't want the whole money tree. What good is that big thing to me? You keep the branches. You can keep the trunk and the root. Because all that I want is just a little bit of the fruit. So if you want to be sure, I'll be your little old honey, honey bunny. You try me, start me off. On Christmas night with a 5-pound. No, I better increase that. Make it 10 pounds. No, I better put in a good bag while I'm begging, because, I mean, I'd catch you next year. You know, people go out. Sometimes you don't see them no more, so bring the money. Santa, can you hear me? Five, bring me some money. Oh, Santa. Now, what do I want with this dime? Are you kidding?
She cracks me up. Oh, my God. When she was alive, she cracked me up. I was little, and she was cracking me up. Pearl Bailey, God rest her soul, born March 29th, 1918, passed away August 17th, 1990. And just an amazing individual. There's no amount of time that I could give you to tell you about the end-all and be-all of who Pearl Bailey was. Award-winning
actress, singer, entertainer, humanitarian, lover of mankind. Oh, she really was, and she changed minds and hearts like you would not believe. For those people who knew what she was like when she walked the earth, you knew. My mother and father loved her, and any time that she was on TV, their faces lit up, and that was not just our house, but houses all across the U.S. and the world. Virginia born, but spent a lot of time in Philly. Matter of fact, she got her start by playing Philly's black nightclubs in the 1930s. Yes, she did. And one of the big things for the times that they were living in back then, and I know this was the year that I was born, so I knew a little bit when I was a little girl about what was happening in the climate of America, but for Pearl Bailey to have married the jazz drummer Louis Belson, interracial marriages, woohoo! We didn't talk about them too much, let alone think about doing them. My God, that was a very, very big deal. And they had one of the happier unions that anybody could ever imagine. They adopted two kids. Both of the kids are gone. Matter of fact, Louis passed away, I think 2009. And it was on Valentine's Day. And within a relatively short period of time after that, his daughter passed away. Just those bonds that families have, you know it yourself. There is a song, if you can get a hold of it, you will not be right for days. Better not get a hold of it. By the country duo, we played them back in the day, Pinkard and Bowden. And the song, a specific title escapes me, but it was all about Grandma and Grandpa, and Grandma passed away, and Grandpa just could not continue, so he passed away within a short time later. How many times have you heard that in your life? It really is true. So the Belson family was very close, and I am pretty sure that the daughter died of a broken heart after Mom went and then Dad. You know how it goes. Oh, we don't want to dwell on stuff like this. Well, I dwelled on this on Tuesday. I want to talk happy talk. I do. Pearl Bailey was one of the happier people that walked the planet. If you get a chance to do anything, why don't you pick up five-pound box of money? I wish you could pick up a five-pound box of money. But you can get the song on Hipster's Holiday. Songs that were recorded from 1946 to 1988. That's a big stretch. But Pearl herself, if you can get any of those tunes that she has done, she could be serious, she could be funny. She was everything to a lot of people. God bless her. Duke Ellington, we heard from, and his orchestra from Jingle Bell Jazz. That was Jingle Bells. And Columbia Records, once again, got their fave raves in the world of jazz from 1959 to 1962. And they put them on the album, and you'll hear Dave Brubeck, God rest his soul, Chico Hamilton, Miles Davis, Carmen McRae. It goes on, and you can also find that version of Jingle Bells on Louis Armstrong, Louis and Friends, and there was a Christmas selection that we played the other day. That's got quite a lineup of talent on it, too. Yeah, Vince Guaraldi started things off with the German-based O Tannenbaum, which translates into O Christmas Tree, and Vince Guaraldi, there's another story. Whew. I just was talking about him the other day, so I'm kind of emotional thinking about him because he got away from us too soon at the age of 47. And it was one of those situations, and I need to tell you this. Vince Guaraldi had an amazing career. I'll tell you about that first. He was born in San Francisco, and he will be forever connected to Peanuts. You know that. And how that happened was Vince had an Italian mom who immersed him in music, and she and the dad, Vince's dad, divorced. She married another man, and this man took Vince under his wing. There were family members who made sure Vince knew the ins and outs of music, especially jazz. Vince really took to it. That piano was just everything to him. And in the early 60s, he knew that Black Orpheus had done so well, the Brazilian-French collaboration, Antonio Carlos Jobim, associated with that. Vince did a song, original song, on jazz impressions of Black Orpheus. And that song didn't do so well. But on the other side of that song was Cast Your Fate to the Wind. And program directors heard that on the jazz stations. They played that. It blew up. And Lee Mendelson, who was just about to make a decision, or he was trying to make a decision about who would do the music for the Charlie Brown special that he had in mind for TV, he was thinking, who am I going to get? He was crossing the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge when he heard Cast Your Fate to the Wind by Vince Guaraldi, and he called his friend Nat and said, could you get me that guy's number? And he did, and the rest is history. Now, 47 years old, Vince had this amazing career, just everything in life. He didn't feel well. He was at Lee Mendelson's house, and he thought he had heartburn. Now, the doctor had said to him not to worry. It was nothing. So the next day, Vince finished up another Charlie Brown recording session, Arbor Day. It's Arbor Day, Charlie Brown. And he did a concert, and a friend of his saw him walk across the floor and fall down. He had a big heart issue that wasn't caught. So I'm telling you what, I am suspicious of doctors anyway because they take a lot of kickbacks from pharmaceutical companies, and every time you get a kind of secondary or tertiary procedure, doctor gets a little something in the way of the thank you from the specialist. And I know that's negative, but I'm telling you to safeguard your own health and be proactive about what you need to do to take care of you, because essentially it's down to you to take care of business. If you happen to get a wonderful doctor, that's almost a miracle. Bless your heart. But you've got to make sure that you get a second, maybe a third or fourth opinion. All right? That's all I'm going to say. Vince Guaraldi, we loved you while you were here, Vince, and your music lives on. God bless your heart. Eric Marienthal just had a birthday. Woohoo! And we just talked about Charlie Brown, right? Well, there is another sweet album called 40 Years, A Charlie Brown Christmas, came out in 2005. Thank you, David Benoit. And Eric Marienthal was on the album. And you're about to hear a sweet saxophone arrangement of Christmas Time Is Here. Brian O'Neill comes up in less than 20 minutes. Stick around to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
broken heart of men. Who would rise hunger and thirst, a kind of love that never ends, love that glows, love that shines, love that spans the test of time. I hope you find what Christmas means, love that laughs, love that sings, love that steers the hearts of kings. I hope you find what Christmas means. Who would arise and dare to believe there's a paradise of hope and peace? Who would rise faithful and free? This kind of love will never cease. Love that fills you, love that flows, love that burns until it grows. I hope you find what Christmas means. Love that dreams, love that moves, love that nurtures every wound. I hope you find what Christmas means.
To mine, love that always lets you in, love
I had to play that song before Brian O'Neill visits us at the top of the next hour. Chem, long association with Brian O'Neill, and that is Chem's title track of a really well-received holiday package, What Christmas Means. Woo! He gets spiritual, he gets down. There's a couple of ways he goes on this album, and it's just really nice. A track, too, with Lettucey on it, if you want to pick something up that's really fabulous. And know that when you pick it up, know that Chem, at one time, was homeless, addicted, and isolated. And look at him now. If you go to his website, you would not believe anything that I just said about him. He really does make it a point to live his life in gratitude because there were specific people, and Brian O'Neill is one of them, who picked him up when he needed to be picked up. So you know him from Love Calls and that song that kills me, How Did You Find Your Way Back in My Life? Woo, Lord. If you saw him in Sparkle this year, not the first movie he's going to do, but this is the album to get the focus right now, What Christmas Means, really sweet. Eric Marienthal, California-based sax man who also plays flute and piccolo, too, by the way. Eric had a big birthday. Now, I think that Facebook said it was yesterday, but I see it on the 13th, so I'm conflicted. Doesn't matter. He had a birthday. He's wonderful. And what you heard, Christmas Time Is Here, was from 40 Years, a Charlie Brown Christmas that was the brainchild of David Benoit, who took his inspiration largely from what he heard Vince Guaraldi do back in the 60s. So just want to tell you some folks that were on this particular track. Such a cute insert in here, too, by the way. Oh, my gosh. David Benoit was on piano. Yep. And Peter Erskine was on drums. Dave Carpenter on acoustic bass. And the song was written, Christmas Time Is Here, by Vince Guaraldi and Lee Mendelson. Man, that's some good memories. Now, I want to turn our attention to something that I need for you to hear. We are certainly going to play a Brian O'Neill track, and I'm just figuring on the time, since Brian, I'm sure, is going to be here pretty soon. He'll be here about a minute or so before the hour, but I want you to hear a couple of tracks. Also from Michigan is somebody that we had on just the other day, Demetrius Neighbors. I wanted you to hear something that's brand new from his Christmas with Crayon CD. This is his take on Silent Night. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy is what you're listening to. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Couldn't wait to play that. And I'm glad I had that song, too, because I might have been not correct about the time for Brian O'Neill. He might be joining us at 3. Just wrote to Kelly to ask her, and if needs be, I'll call. You know what? It's going to be one of those days. Whatever is the case, it's going to be cool. I know he'll be here. Mesmerized is what you heard. Daisy is such an amazing album, and Brian is such an amazing guy. I love the idea that young men get tutelage, especially when they have become such wonderful artists, and when pressed to ask what was an inspiration for them, they say their grandmothers. That Daisy, something else. She knew that her grandson had a real love early on. Actually, he was playing a couple of instruments, and it wasn't until he was in high school that he found out how much he was digging that piano, and she bought him one. So Mesmerized is what you just heard, one of my favorite songs ever, not just from Brian O'Neill, but ever. Just something about that that speaks to me, and that's from the CD Daisy. And we heard We Three Kings. And you know what you can do? This is how cool Brian is. You can get a free download of that song and the Christmas song and a couple of others. If you go to his Facebook page, you'll see all about it. And as is the case now, more than, gosh, ever, some of these artists are focusing on their Facebook pages before they focus on their websites. There's just too much for Brian to do between what he does with Chem, what he does on his own, what he does with the Dew Foundation to possibly keep up with a Facebook page. So just so you know. Yeah. So anyway, we'll see what the story is. I might have been wrong. It's not that this happens a whole lot, but it's one of these days where I'm not worried because it's the Christmas season. It's December the 20th, and things will go as they go. You know, we've got a whole lot in the world to consider before we ever get feathers ruffled about anything pertaining to a radio show. Brian will be here by hook or by crook. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to dive into some more music in the meantime. We've got about 2 hours left in the show, so we've got lots of music. And I wanted to play this because I wasn't really familiar with this song. There will be two songs. One, the voice will be familiar to you. Secondly, the group of artists will be familiar to you, and you can pick out the voices on the next song. But for now, there's one voice, and it belongs to Kev Moe. This is Jingle Bell Jamboree on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Christmas time, it comes but once a year. Bells are ringing and the family's all here. All the children want to help decorate the tree. And there's lots of nice presents under them for you and me. Oh, Santa Claus is coming, it's a Jingle Bell Jamboree. Yeah, it's a Jingle Bell Jamboree. Mama's in the kitchen, Papa's in there too. Yeah, that's right. Well, howdy, Uncle Bud, howdy, howdy, how are you? Yeah, we gonna play some old records and a few CDs. Or you can go in the other room and see what's on TV. Oh, Santa Claus is coming. Yeah, Santa Claus is coming. It's a Jingle Bell Jamboree.
night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse, the stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled, all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter.
What to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called him by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away you all.
Then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down that chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound.
There he comes.
His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose a cherry. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bull.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and laying a finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose.
There he goes.
To his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him explain as he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all and to all a good night." Woo! Merry Christmas! Woo!
Good time. Oh my goodness. Oh, that was so much fun. Thank you, Griselda. I know that you're responsible for sending that to me. She sent me that last year, and I wanted to make it a point to play it this year, just because I think that we needed the reminder of the song and the timeline factor. That was Dave Koz and Friends. And what friends? David Benoit, Rick Braun, Brenda Russell, Peter White, and a bunch more. 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And you'll forgive me for saying the title, Smooth Jazz Christmas. Okay. See, every time I say the word smooth, an angel falls. Just kidding. I wanted to make it a point to play that because, it's a lot of fun. And Dave is going to be at the Warfield in San Francisco on the 23rd with David Benoit and Sheila E. and Javier Colon. Yeah! And I really didn't know the circumstances of this particular album, but since the past several days, I've heard a lot of people say that when this album came out, it did a lot to heal, because it was ushered out to the public on September the 25th, 2001. And we had just been through a set of very gruesome circumstances in the United States, and we are experiencing them again. So I wanted to make sure that I tried to keep it light today. I wanted to keep this light today, because we need it. We need to hear some fun and frivolity, and we need to get a balance back. A lot of us are grieving, and will continue to grieve. But I'll tell you what, and this is going to be instrumental in making you realize the overwhelming nature of forgiveness and the faith that people have. Little Anna Green, who will be laid to rest on Saturday. Her mom is Nelba. Her daddy is Jimmy Green, who is the jazz saxophonist. People of tremendous faith. Anna leaves behind mom and dad and also her twin brother, Isaiah. And it is amazing that mom and dad or someone in the family has put up a tribute page to Anna. And there has been over 22,000 people who have liked that page on Facebook. And this is essentially what her mom, Nelba, has said. If you come to the funeral on Saturday, wear something sparkly or purple, because that was Anna's favorite. And we thank everyone for liking this page. The love has overwhelmed us. And make sure you understand that love wins. Woo! That woman and her husband will do so much to bring people closer to the brotherhood and sisterhood that we should all have. And this little girl, Anna, she has been posted on my page a few times. She will be posted again. Just this beautiful little girl who was so immersed in worship to the Lord that she would dance. She would make up dances, and she would dance because she loved Jesus. So I want you to have that focus in your head as you go through the Christmas season. If you are grieving, know that all these little angels are with God, and doesn't take away the pain, but we have to keep ourselves together enough to go forward, because that's what everyone concerned, including those precious caretakers, six of them that they had, would want us to do. We heard Keb Mo and Jingle Bell Jamboree from All Star Christmas. That was out in 2000, by the way. Pretty wild to conceive, 2000 now, huh? All Star Christmas. My gosh, a whole bunch of cool folks were on that. Keb Mo, just a little bit about him. You all know anyway. Taking the country blues, taking some folk, taking some serious soul that he always had. Lives in Nashville, got a couple of kids, got them late in life. Played Robert Johnson in a docudrama called Can't You Hear the Wind Howl? And he's got a great schedule coming up in 2013. If you get a chance to see him, you will be changed. No joke. Just an amazing talent and a great guy. Oh, my gosh. We're going to hear Jimmy Smith. And, again, we may have got wires crossed, and Brian might be coming here at 3 o'clock. We'll see what the circumstances are. Jimmy Smith, beloved by so many, inspired by so many. You will hear why right now. Let us hear, please. Santa Claus is coming to town. Thank you.
Cry. know Dasher and Prancer and Vixen, but what do you know about Rudolph and his nose? Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you wouldn't even say it glows. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee, Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Maybe it's much too early in the game. Ah, but I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. Wonder whose arms will hold you good and tight when it's exactly 12 o'clock at night. Welcoming in the new year, New Year's Eve. Maybe I'm crazy to suppose I'd ever be the one you chose out of the 1,000 invitations you've received. Ah, oh, but in case I stand one little chance, here comes the jackpot question in advance. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. Crazy to suppose that I'd ever be the one you chose out of the 1,000 invitations you'll receive. Ah, but in case I stand one little chance, here comes the jackpot question in advance. What are you doing?
Mercy, huh? Joe Williams. Man, that's been on the back burner to play for you for the past couple of weeks and finally got a chance to do it. What are you doing New Year's Eve? And that's a question to pose to you. Oh, mercy. I'll just keep my mouth shut. Joe Williams from that Holiday Feeling back in 1990 or so. And Joe was among us, born in December, actually, December 12th, 1918, passed away in 1999. But Lord, the years that he gave us. Oh, and this has been mentioned to you before, but you know when you have a really good memory and as years go by, you go back to some memories that for whatever reason stick with you, like the top 10 or top 5 of the cool stuff. Joe Williams was one of those. My sister was seeing a gentleman that she is now married to back in the mid-60s. And my other sister was living in Newport, Rhode Island. And a few of the family members came together for this summer in 1967 in Newport. And we were at the Newport Jazz Festival. And Buddy Rich was playing. And Joe Williams was singing. And Joe Williams came out to the audience. And he sang to some ladies. And women were passing out. Oh, my gosh. The power of sheer, this is the truth, sheer animal magnetism. He was a gentleman. The voice was incredible. And when he sang to you, there was nobody in the room, or in this case, nobody within view because it was outside. Shoo! Was that joint jumping? It was really wonderful. Look up the information for Newport Jazz Festival in the summer of 1967. Man, everybody who played was on fire. It was crazy. Joe Williams, yes. Somebody described this particular album, and certainly Joe Williams in specific, as a cup of hot chocolate by a roaring fireplace. Don't make me reply to that statement. Don't make me. Woo! Getting a piece of paper here and fanning myself. What are you doing New Year's? We also heard from Ella Fitzgerald from Ella Wishes You a Swinging Christmas from 1960. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know, I did not know this about Ella Fitzgerald, but at one point, I know she had an impoverished childhood, and she was born in Virginia, and she was homeless for a while. Yeah. And her life turned around, varying degrees. I mean, you know, you want to look up Ella Fitzgerald, we're talking about one of the major superstars, honestly, of all time. And certainly what she did for jazz and pop, just tremendous. But 1938, go back to then, and if you see a movie, what was it? Abbott and Costello. There is Ella Fitzgerald, and she's singing Tisket a Tasket. 1938 for that song, that sort of put her wheels in motion. Man, what a glorious voice she had, and just really cool to know that some people can get the presence of mind to pull themselves out of wherever they are. It's very, very difficult sometimes, but to do it, oh, means everything. We need to have more of those stories, don't we? We heard, too, Jimmy Smith, that was not your Christmas ham, that was your Christmas Hammond. Sorry. One of the kings of the Hammond B3 organ, Lord have mercy. A December baby again. Jimmy Smith, Santa Claus is Coming to Town from Christmas 64. Born in Norristown, PA, right down the road from Jenkintown, PA. Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. Oh, my gosh, just a little stone's throw from Philly. Just pebble down the road. And on that particular album, by the way, Kenny Burrell and Quentin Warren and Grady Tate and the, Quartet, Joe Newman Quartet. And I'm looking at all these names because last night T's dad was here. We were listening to some music as we were arranging this beautiful tree that we have. Oh, the tree is so nice this year. And listening to Brian Auger and the Trinity from 1970, Before, B-E-F-O-U-R, whew, on LP. So it had some scratches because Sister Child wore that thing out back in the day. Brian Auger was so inspired by Jimmy Smith that he went wild as a youth back in the London days and made sure he knew everything about the Hammond B3 organ. Joey DeFrancesco, certainly, and many others gravitated to the organ. Greg Hatza, also, who we had on the show, did the same. But Brian Auger, he is still kicking in his 70s, and he's still inspired by Jimmy Smith. Yeah. Woo! If you get a chance, it's going to be a little tricky for you to find Before, one of the early glimpses that we have of fusion. Classical background, but blending rock and jazz. Woof. Brian Auger is one of the champions of that. Let's play a couple of tunes, shall we? And if I get a call from Kelly, it's cool. If Brian can do this at 3, that's cool. So, again, I might have got my wires crossed, and I apologize to the guests that are assembled for Brian. Not that I've done the time factor askew too much this year, but it happens. Let's play another keyboardist. And I have not had a chance to play this gentleman. Not that he ever deserves overlooking, but when you're talking about holiday music, he means something. When you're talking about soundtracks, he means a lot. TV composition, the reputation that Dave Grusin has, holy cow, it's amazing. This man has had quite a career, and it will be evident if you are not familiar with him, and maybe this is the first time you've heard a song by him. This is from a compilation that I got a few years ago, but you can find this particular track in more than one project. This is Lo, How a Rose Air Blooming, Dave Grusin on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Now, how many times do you think it's going to be the case where you're going to hear Dave Grusin, Vanessa Williams, and Brian O'Neill all back-to-back? Hey, it's the holiday season. Isn't that nice? The Christmas song from Brian O'Neill. Oh, my gosh. And how generous is he to offer that as a free download? We just love free, especially for Christmas. On the line with us is the man himself. This has been a long time in coming. We did a conversation on actually cool jazz conversations, but that was a few years ago. And I've wanted to get him here all by myself, just share him with the chat room, and then from then on in the archives. This is the great multi-instrumentalist, the musical genius. There, I said it. And the humanitarian who has done so much for so many, and there's still so much work to do, the one, the only, Brian O'Neill. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Trish. What an introduction. Oh, my gosh. How am I going to live up to all that?
You are, you do, and you will, okay?
And I like that. When you say, I will, yes, I definitely will. That is the goal.
Yes, you definitely
I
will.
I apologize. Again, for being so late, I was at Wayne State University. Some people have heard of that place.
Yes.
We're sponsoring all these families for Christmas, so they wanted us to come down and give this long speech and talk about Dew Foundation and homelessness. So they offered us food, and that went over an extra hour and then an extra hour and a half. And I'm here. I made the call within the hour.
God bless you. And look, with you especially, because you are wearing multiple hats these days, and I didn't sweat it at all because I thought, you know, it is the holiday season. This is going to be the last show for Hybrid Jazz for the year. So I just knew that people were pulling on you, taking you to good places, because everybody wants to get that kind of good vibes, especially in the past couple of weeks that we've had. So I'm just glad that you're here, really.
Yeah, and it's good to be here. And you're right. Just these past couple of weeks, you know, just to go down a short list, we Dew Foundation moved to a new building, much larger building. So
wow.
Because we got such a highly discounted rate for this humongo building, we kind of had to do all the work ourselves, the painting, fixing the lights and the windows and things like that. That's kept me busy.
Wow.
We've picked up multiple homeless families to sponsor for Christmas, so, you know, kind of shopping every day for all the things that they need. And then because this is, you know, 'tis the season, everyone is pretty much giving and on the lookout for helping other people. So they're calling Dew Foundation, you know, to offer volunteering, clothing, food, toys. So we're constantly on the run to run out and pick things up, fix things, storm away. And the multiple hat thing, that's just like an understatement.
Yeah.
There has to be a new phrase for a guy that wears multiple hats. let's just say crazy.
How about if you just grow a new head? I mean, you know,
oh,
honestly.
Now, that's a good one. Yeah, I never thought of that one. Yeah, grow a new head and put multiple hats on that one, too.
You know, honestly, here's the scenario I was thinking of, because, you know, Dew Foundation was certainly top of mind for me, and I told Kelly that, but in the past week, it hasn't even been a week since Friday, and we experienced, you know, this new tragedy in America that has taken us all, just thrown us into a tizzy. But I would imagine, Brian, because of what you have done with the foundation, there is this week such a renewed interest in people doing all that they can for children. You are going to get even more attention because people will feel inspired to just start their lives anew. And it starts with kids.
Oh, it sure does. It sure does. That's the we're, like I said, we're sponsoring these families. And these are single women, single mothers that have multiple children. So we took a different approach. Instead of us going out and buying things we think the kids would like, we actually called them and said, you guys make us a list of everything that you want.
Oh, man.
And these kids went to town. They didn't overdo it, but their lists were pretty long. And believe it or not, many of them asked for just shoes and sweatshirts and you know, basic things. There weren't too many, I want an iPad, I want an iPhone.
Right.
Fancy things. So because they didn't ask for all the fancy things, and we know that, you know, these families are struggling, we threw in the fancy stuff because they didn't ask for it.
Oh.
But the attention is definitely on children this year. And like you said, because of the tragedies that have been taking place, mainly the one last week, we've gotten a few phone calls about that and people wanting to help more single parents with multiple kids.
Mm.
So you're right. The attention just kind of trickles down, and hopefully the whole world will just get the message and just stay at the level that we are now.
Yeah.
As far as giving attention to people.
Yeah. I am really feeling that vibe from people. I feel like this ultimate page has been turned, and there's no going back to what we used to be, because we can't. And if we ever needed a sign that all of us are our brother and sister's keeper, mm-hmm. what do you need more than this? You know?
No. That was the ultimate sign.
And you know. And how is it that you, gosh, because you're only what, 47? You're 47. So you're
right.
you're still young. I mean, in terms of the world, you are. I don't know what the world is thinking. We can't certainly pay attention to the media, or else we'd all go insane. But you've done so much in your space on Earth that you've traveled. How is it that you've had this really successful music career, and you've done so well, more than what people think, because it's more than being the ultimate accompanist to anybody that asks you, and your solo career and film scores and jingles and playing in multiple genres. How did you get to the point where you woke up one day and went, whoa, wait a minute, I need to do something else. I need to find what my mission is, and here it is. How did you get to the place where you founded the Do Foundation?
Well, I don't think I woke up and said I wanted to do this. I think it found me.
Mm.
And I could say that for my music career also. And I knew the music career early on in life, around 5. You know, and every kid aspires to be something at a young age. But when I spoke the words, or when I saw a live band play, I don't know if it was on television or something, I just saw instruments and people playing, and I remember saying, that's what I want to do when I grow up. And that stuck. I never forgot that. It was just like in my blood, and, you know, the music just came natural. But I would say maybe in my early 30s, I just started to sense that there was something else. I didn't know what it was, and then it's like it knocked on my door and said, here's something that you're supposed to be doing.
Mm.
And that's helping other people. I mean, I've always been this overly sensitive guy growing up. I've had to hide a lot of emotions, you know, from my buddies as a kid. Whenever I saw, like, bullying going on and, like, the underdog being beat up, once the bullies left, I'm the guy that ran over to the kid that got beat up and just felt bad for him and, you know, help him off the ground or, you know, treat him extra special or something like that. So I knew I was a little on the sensitive side. And but, you know, again, at that age, I didn't know what to make of that until around my 30s, and it all came together, just thinking, yeah, there's something else I'm supposed to do. And it came to me, humanitarian. Mm. I'm supposed to help other people. And I've been told that I already help other people through my music.
Definitely.
But I needed to go a little further, because there were people who were really suffering physically, emotionally, And I had to go further. And because I was on tour for many years and being in all of the different cities around the country, I did start to notice that poverty-stricken people and homelessness was exactly the same everywhere. Everyone needed the same things. They wanted the same thing. And that was pretty much to be off the streets, be out of the cold, and have something to eat.
Mm.
So Do Foundation came along.
God bless you. And it's so funny. I didn't plan it this way, but in doing research for today's show, I certainly knew, because we played earlier something from Kem's new CD. Of course, I'm going to play something from Kem's new CD on a show where you're going to be the focal point. And I knew his background. I've known about Kim's background and the struggles that he had with homelessness for a while. I did not know about Ella Fitzgerald and that she had been homeless for a while. Didn't know that.
Yeah, there were many people who have been homeless before that are big and famous now.
Yes.
Some have shared the story and some have not, but there are many.
And actually, I have a friend of mine who lives in California. His name is Norman Woods, and he goes by the name of Inside, like Inside, when he does his spoken word and his songs, accompanied by a jazz trio or quartet. And he had been homeless for a while, and he pulled himself out and now is doing quite well in Marin County, by the way. And he said,
very good.
Yes, he said something when he was on the show one day that really got me. He said, when anyone is walking along the street and you see someone that you know is homeless and they've got a cup or whatever, or they're just sitting there, he said, do me a favor, look them in the eye. And that stuck. Because we go about our business on a day-to-day, and sometimes it's not that we want to ignore anybody, and we want to do, I think even more now, so much to help one another. But we don't know what to do with our own emotions. So instead of confronting them, we choose to look the other way because it hurts too much to go inside of us.
Right.
How was it when you first got involved? Was that a slippery slope for you, or did you feel comfortable? How long did it take you to feel comfortable with communicating with the homeless?
It didn't take long at all. I'm kind of a silly goofball kind of guy when I meet anyone. So I kind of started out that way, and it, you know, some people wouldn't take my sense of humor, you know, the right way. And then one day out of the blue, I woke up and decided I need to be homeless. I need to experience what they go through. How do they see things from that side? And my friends and family thought I was crazy, but I had Kelly and my crew drop me off in the center of downtown Detroit. It was like 10 degrees outside and maybe 6 inches of snow.
Mm.
I had my coat, my gloves, boots, hat, and about $6 or $7 in my pocket, and they took off. And I was to be out there for 2 weeks to survive. So within a few days of being on the streets, I started to feel what homeless people really felt on the inside emotionally. That feeling was abandonment. I felt as though I was invisible. Now, I'm in the heart of downtown. There's all these business people and merchants and just people. They're everywhere. I'm standing on corners next to buildings, and everyone's walking by. No one looks at me. No one says hello. By day 4 or 5, you know, I'm really looking kind of rough, and I've got people driving by screaming at me to get a job, get off the streets. You know, what am I doing in this area? One warmer evening, there was a car that drove by, and they threw me the finger. And I'm thinking to myself, these people don't know who I am. They don't know why I'm here, how I got here, my mental state, anything like that. And I really started to see and feel what it's like for people who are homeless, who are out on the streets. The biggest thing that hurt me and what I learned from it was how a person can easily become hopeless. That's when you hit rock bottom.
Mm.
I didn't become hopeless because I knew when this run was over, I could pack up and go home.
Yes.
But I did sense what it would be like if I had nothing to go to and I had to stay out there forever, you know, with no end in sight or no possible help. And I understood that feeling. So once we opened Due Foundation and I'm able to sit at my desk and talk with clients and hear their story, and when they tell me how bad things are, I can look them back in their eyes and tell them, I truly understand how you feel and what you've gone through, and actually mean it.
Yes.
Therefore, because of that, we've been able to design some of the best programs and services to help people, to truly help people at Dew Foundation, because of the, you know, the little bit of experience that I've gained, but mainly from listening to all of our clients. You don't just come in and apply for, you know, the services that we have. Before that happens, when we do our intake and assessment, we give you all the time you want to sit and talk to us, and we listen to everything. And then they get a hug. We make sure we give them hugs and handshakes and all that stuff, because we've also noticed that when that person's spirits are lifted, even if it's just for a moment, even if the fact that it's from another human being smiling back at them and listening and giving them a hug, their spirits are lifted, therefore they're more willing to help themselves. The hope is back, that glimmer in their eye and in their heart is back, and it becomes much easier for Dew Foundation to help them. That's one thing that's lacking in the world is, you know, like you mentioned that your inside friend suggested, is looking people in their eyes. You know, that's a form of communication, and that's a form of communication that homeless people hardly ever receive because they're considered invisible.
And actually, I was reminded of that last night because, you know, they do this great special right before Christmas about adoption on one of the networks, and that was on last night. And, you know, they had the happy stories of children who essentially, they weren't homeless, but they felt halfway like they were because they were abandoned by parents, and then they were found by families. But a little boy at the end who hadn't been claimed, he doesn't have a family. Oh, my God, Brian, it would have broken your heart. He was about 10 years old, and he said, I just want to feel as though somebody loves me, somebody will get me and take me out of the empty place where I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just want, I mean, this is the United States of America. It just seems hard to believe, doesn't it, that there are people in these circumstances that are feeling so isolated and abandoned.
Yeah, it's quite amazing when you think of where we live and the times and the technology that we have and all the money that's in circulation.
Yes.
It's very sad, but, you know, instead of the people here at Dew Foundation sitting around, you know, kind of bickering about that, you know the motto, we just get up and do something. I mean, there are people suffering this moment, so we try to do as much as we can. I considered even running for office, you know, for mayor, to have more power to do more for the city. But I think you were around when I posted that on Facebook, but I had a lot of people on the side say, Brian, you'd probably be more effective not inside of politics. So I kind of backed off the political thing. Hopefully I'll be able to persuade some politicians and people with power to, you know, make some changes, because it really starts with people, you know, not stuff, not money. You know, the value of the country means nothing if its people are not healthy and not fed and not housed, not educated.
That's right. And actually, politicians are smitten with those in the music industry, so they're more inclined to pay attention when you're on the outside, and they don't consider you to be on the outside looking in. They just are fawning fans. When you're a fan, you'll go the extra mile.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, I was told that by someone, too, that I have a certain amount of power just being a recording artist or just, you know, founding Dew Foundation and having it become more and more successful. My voice becomes bigger. So they'll be hearing from us, trust me.
The
mayor and the council people here in Detroit, they are very aware of Dew Foundation, so they need to get their act together because we're doing a lot of their work for them.
Well, I hope so, because actually, for the rest of the United States and for the world, that is quite a feather in the state of Michigan's cap and in Detroit's jurisdiction to have you living there bringing glory to the city and to the state. Hello.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, And, you know, there's a lot of politicians who do nothing, but they're quite eager to take any glory that you could give them and then say, oh, yeah, we knew about this all along. Boy, Brian just brought it to the attention of the common masses. And meanwhile, you were the one who did all the legwork.
Yeah. But, you know, and even if they decided to go that route and continue to go that route, that doesn't bother me. As long as people are getting the help that they need,
yep.
That's what's important.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I just think the world of you, and what do you foresee 2013 being about? Do you have specific plans, or do you find that people are helping you more, or more and more people anxious to get on board with donations and actual physical labor for this?
Well, the physical labor and volunteers are they're coming a mile a minute, and we need
Good.
That.
Good.
And on the other hand, we need some sort of funding other than my own pocket and my own music career, only because we need to do things bigger, better, and faster. And, you know, the saying goes, everything requires money. Financial help would be greatly appreciated. We have some people that are stepping up. And with it being Christmas, end of year, people like to... or they're looking to get the tax credit by the end of the year.
Yeah.
So that helps. But our big plans for 2013 is to open another branch of Due Foundation. It's between Atlanta and somewhere in Florida.
Oh.
And we say Florida because out of all of the states, Florida has the hardest, roughest, craziest homelessness laws. People are really suffering there. And I used to live in Atlanta, so... I kind of have my foot in the door as far as getting another building there, you know, up and running ASAP. So it's between those two, hopefully maybe both.
And I used to live in Florida, so I know with Florida, this is just as real as it can be. Florida is the last chance saloon for a lot of folks. They go to Florida thinking that, okay, I'm going to make it here. Because there's sunshine and I can get my foot in the door of this situation or that situation, and they find themselves very quickly in a scenario where the dreams didn't come true. So I know what you're talking about, and it is crazy in Florida in
yes,
a couple of different ways.
Very bad, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of people think California, any place where it's warm, and really that only eliminates maybe 10% of your problem because of weather. You know, with it being warm pretty much year-round, you don't have to worry about the cold and all of the clothing and the boots and scarves and, you know, freezing to death. But there's other issues.
Yeah.
The other 90% that still holds you back. And you're more bound to be arrested in places like Florida, California.
Mm. Really?
Oh, yeah, for being homeless, for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, doing absolutely nothing illegal, but because of some of the local laws in a lot of communities, you know, we don't want homeless people here at this library. We don't want homeless people here in front of our McDonald's. You know, these are all public places, and you get the right community of people together, and they will draft some kind of law that says, okay, you can get a citation just for being at this corner. And what really kills me is that how do they know if you're homeless? So they're doing some kind of profiling because nowadays, and believe it or not, homeless people, there are some homeless people that look like you and me. They dress nice. They keep a haircut. They're clean cut, but they're homeless. You know, it's homelessness does not have a look anymore.
Yeah.
People don't realize that either. It does not have a look. There are kids, there are people who go to work every day and they're 100% homeless. But they work every day. They may live in their car. They may stay at a shelter or a motel. There are kids that go to school every day that are homeless. They look like normal kids, but they're completely homeless. Now, what if you take those people and put them in front of the library? You arrest them too?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So for me, it goes really deep. And it's very technical and it's very deep. It's not just the surface stuff where if you look homeless and you're standing in an area that you don't belong, of course I'm going to make a call. You shouldn't be here. That really bugs me.
Mm. And Brian, you know, this is another aspect of what you're doing. And I know that people are looking under a microscope now, specimens under glass. There's going to be a lot of people who will get that hairy eyeball publicly because of the circumstances of last Friday. There are a number of people who are homeless who never got attention for being for having been challenged mentally. Do you find that doors are opening up as far as taking care of those who need help emotionally? Do you find that doors are closing? What do you see happening in that regard as far as homelessness is concerned?
There seems to be the same amount of resources. It really hasn't changed for the mentally ill, specifically in our area. There are a handful of organizations and hospitals that will take in the mentally ill that are homeless here in Detroit. Sometimes it seems like it dwindles down and then they open up again. I don't know if they're seasonal. It's really weird. We haven't been able to put our finger on it. And I haven't done any more research in other states as of yet. But for the most part, the severely mentally ill people don't seem to find due foundation or they're harder to bring into our office because of their illness.
Yeah.
And you don't see them out and about as much. Now, my fear is the ones who are mentally challenged severely like that probably get hurt. I think other people do things to them and they disappear. And there's so much crime in Detroit that, you know, there's people that die and they're killed and murdered and things like that here. And it's not reported. You don't see it on the news. It's not in the newspaper. But we personally know tons of homeless people. A lot of them are mentally challenged, and we'll see them, you know, during a season, and we talk to them. They know us. They know of Due Foundation. We'll visit them in some of their little locations, and all of a sudden we don't see them anymore. You know, and these are people who have been around for years. You know, you talk to the local barber, it's like, oh, yeah, Crazy Joe, he's been out on this corner for like 15 years. We haven't seen him the past couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to suspect that something happened to them.
Yeah, I really do wish there was a way to, you know, it's a lot of people are probably thinking about this just because of the fact that, you know, we always talk about maintenance as far as our bodies are concerned. And, you know, the big deal on Facebook is talking about whole foods and organic living. And, you know, we got to make sure that we put the right fuel in our engines in order to operate properly before they break down. But we don't talk about that so much as far as any emotional scenarios are concerned, because honestly, Facebook, as much as it has been good, there's good and bad in it. But one of the things that we do is we front a lot on Facebook. We can be other personalities. We don't let people into our world, so they don't know the real us. So if there was a way to get to some folks before their inner turmoil explodes and it unleashes on the world, you know, shoot, maybe you can inspire some folks as an offshoot of what you're doing to do exactly that, finding those people.
Yeah. Well, we need help with that, and not just physical bodies out here helping Due Foundation, but I think we need to strengthen families and the relationships, because it seems the bulk of our clients that come to us who are homeless, you know, we ask them, how did you become homeless, and do you have any other support systems locally, as in family?
Right.
And many of these people, their entire families live here, but they're not willing to help.
Oh,
so
boy.
It's almost an educational thing. That's a tough one. I mean, you almost want to call some of these parents of, like, especially the younger people who come to see us and talk to the parents and say, you know, why are you giving up on your son or your daughter? They're struggling. And I'm sure most of it is, well, he slipped off into some crime, or he did some drugs, and we don't want that in his house. We give him an ultimatum and, you know, stop doing this or you have to leave. Well, I understand that part, but when he leaves, remember, we're in Detroit. It's wintertime. Where is he going to go?
Right,
he's going to get into more trouble. You know, does he have uncles and aunts and cousins? Do you guys ever, like, all talk to him at once or different times? So we see that as a problem too, the lack of family, the lack of, you know, just other support from friends, things like that. And that could be part of, I don't know, it could be cultural or it can be cultural and educational. But the root of most of the root cause of a lot of homelessness goes far deeper than most people think. It's not just, you know, some guy's doing okay and then he started drugs and got fired and became homeless. It's not that simple.
Exactly.
Not at all. The most normal people can become homeless in a heartbeat.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding? Some folks are just a paycheck away from that. I know some stories here in Baltimore, and you know Baltimore and Detroit are a lot alike.
Very much.
Boy, so it would just be really cool to have these, for lack of a better word, do foundation franchises. That's my dream for you.
there you go. You want to be in every major city, and Baltimore is on that list. Come to think of it, and I know I have quite a few friends there in Baltimore. And real quick, when you said Baltimore, it just reminded me. I think the saddest time of me being a humanitarian and seeing with my own eyes something on the streets took place in Baltimore. I was performing with Kim. We were staying at one of your 4 or 5 star hotels. I can't remember the location. We were on tour buses, and we were to depart at like 4 in the morning. So it's just downtown Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all standing outside. You know, it's a warm summer night. And our tour buses pull up, and I'm kind of looking around, and I saw some movement across the street in front of another building. And I look really close, and there's maybe 10 or dozen people sleeping on cardboard boxes in the open in front of a building. And I thought, no way, I'm not seeing this. So I walked across the street to get a closer look, and there were families.
These were women
and children and men, they were cardboard boxes, and just in the open, all sleeping on cardboard boxes. And I just stood in the middle of the street, just not knowing what to do. I didn't want to get on the tour bus. I wanted to stay right there and do something. As I started to walk away, I looked back, and I saw, like, I wouldn't say a pack, but maybe 5 or 6 large rats run past these people,
next
to them. And, Trish, I almost passed out in the street from pain in my heart.
Yes.
I didn't want to get on the tour bus. I didn't want to continue the tour. I felt like I needed to stay right there. I immediately called my people back home at the Dew Foundation. I woke them all up, and I said, you guys aren't going to believe this. I was able to get a small snapshot, but it was very dark. I text that to all of them, and I said, you guys, wake up. Look at this picture. Most of them said, well, Brian, we could barely see that. It looks like someone's laying on the ground. So I told them the story. So my whole crew's awake. By the time I got off tour and got back to Detroit, we had a big meeting and said, you know, we came up with plans on how to handle things like that. Should we see that here in Detroit? But that was one moment that I'll never forget it. I'd never seen it with my own eyes. I've seen it in movies. I've heard about it, but to physically see that, it's heartbreaking.
No, I know. And there's just no reason for that at all. And I try to keep balanced about it. You have to be because, you know, when you have just seen the obscene amount of money that was put into campaigns in this year, and know that my mother said to me at one time, she had a chance to go to Venezuela, and she said, I couldn't believe it. She said there was either the very wealthy or the very poor. She said there was no in between. And it just seems that way sometimes. I mean, I get upset when people are cavalier about taking their day-to-day scenarios for granted. It's just, you know, they get inconvenienced when they have a hangnail or their hair doesn't turn out right. I try not to get upset about that because of what you have just described. Do you understand how blessed you are in comparison to people who would give anything to be in your shoes?
Right. Yeah, I feel the same way. But then you realize that, and it's not everyone's fault that they are that way. You've got the media, you've got culturally the way society programs itself, the way people condition each other, the way a family is raised, you know, what they teach you as a kid, and predominantly the media. You know, I'd have to say that their job is to convince you to buy something, that you need this, you know, whatever it is, whatever this fancy 2013 widget is, if it costs $5,000, you need this. It makes your life better. You hear that enough, and then people become that way. It really starts higher up, the fixing of our society. You know, it's a challenge. A lot of homeless moms that come in and say, you know, we gave up on our kids getting into trouble because we can keep them in the house all the time, but the moment they walk out the door, their friends will inspire them to do all these crazy things and think certain ways that they need this, they need that, and they want to, I don't know, it's absurd.
Well, if there was a wish for 2013, if there was a way to stop the feeding into the narcissism, especially that we have in the United States, that would be wonderful. If some people could realize that there's a whole lot more than what they are and what they can do to just help one person besides constantly fixating on what their needs and wants are, that would be wonderful. God.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah. And that's the hardest part of my job, Trish. A lot of people say, Brian, what you do being on the streets and being in bad areas, aren't you afraid? Isn't that hard to do? And I give them all the same answers. Like, nope, that's the easiest part of my job. The hardest part of my job is being the advocate, and that's talking to people and convincing them that to help other people, to not look down upon other human beings who aren't in the same position that they are. That
mm-hmm.
is like the hardest job. I mean, think of, I'm sure you have a friend or you know someone right now today that when you mention homelessness or if they saw you giving a homeless guy 25 cents, they chew your head off.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine trying to convince that person to have a heart. That's how my job is times 1,000. You know,
gosh,
trying to convince
Brian.
These people. And I don't tell them, I don't tell them that they should be giving money and they should stop and go out of their way and give this and give that. That's not my goal. My goal is to get them to open their eyes and understand the problem. You don't have to give money. You don't have to do anything. At least look at them. Acknowledge that they're there. Smile, wave. If they ask you for money, smile and say, I'm sorry, I don't have any, or I'm sorry, I can't give you money. You have a nice day. That in itself is a start to help people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. The acknowledgement really is everything. You know, looking at somebody and saying, you know, as our church does, there's a very kind pastor, and he knows what to do because he lives in an area. We go to church across town, and there are a couple of people that come to the church. And Pastor Craig says, listen, here's what I'm going to do. He said, I want you to come in and have a meal. He said, because we're ready to feed you, but I just can't give you money because I'm a little bit nervous about where that money's going to go. But I'll come and feed you. If you want to stay here, we'll figure out a place for you to stay. So, you know, different ways of handling the scenario, but you really do, you've had some work that you've done beautifully, and hopefully it will be a domino effect for you in 2013.
Oh, thank you. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, and say anything that you want to say. You know, what can people do? What can they do now before Christmas or after Christmas? Anything that you wish to say, because I don't want to keep you too much longer.
To simply open their minds and open their hearts to other human beings. Be more understanding. I would love to say, you know, give as much as you can, but start with that. Start with acknowledging people who don't have what you have. You know, ranging from homeless people to those who are just, you know, slightly poverty-stricken. 'Cause that's the start of it. People that are in severe poverty right now. Even though we say we're one paycheck away from being homeless, well, these people are, I don't know, like 2 seconds away from being homeless. They struggle every day just to have one meal a day.
Yeah.
You know, that's not spoken about. It's not talked about often, just the poor, people who are extremely poor. the working poor. So for people to just understand, open their hearts and open their minds.
Yeah.
That's my wish.
That's a big wish. That's a good wish. And there's no reason why a lot of positivity can't come in 2013. Time has come. You know, no more talk about, oh, the economy is struggling. Guess what? A lot of people are struggling, people that you don't normally would think of as struggling. Everybody's got their own cross to bear. So it's time that we really pull in and say, we're going to wish this into existence, and instead of dwelling on the negatives, dwell on what could happen. Just as you said, do something.
Yes. Doesn't get any simpler than that statement, right? Just do something.
Right. When are we going to see you musically? Are you on a tour or what? I have yet to see you do your thing.
You know, I've been wanting to for years. Well, first let's start with this new CD that I'm working
yes.
on.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that should have been done months ago, but like everyone else, so many things happen all at once, and because I'm wearing a zillion hats, the music had to sit in the back seat just for a moment. And since we've made this move, that's been very, very busy for us. So once we're settled in the new place and we open our doors for services starting January 3rd, I'm looking by spring, we'll just say that.
Yay!
The new project should be out, and I'm going to go full steam on this one. There's going to be some professional videos released with some of the songs, and it's going to be promoted a little bit differently. I mean, you know me on Facebook, always giving away free stuff and telling
I know!
Stuff and just, you know, open book. I'm still an open book kind of guy, but we're going to try this a little marketing plan this time just so that I can go a little further.
Cool. And you know what would be a really good idea, and Kelly's in the chat room, as are some other folks, so this would be really cool. We've got a great lineup of people who are going to be at the Berks Jazz Festival, and it would be just cool for you to come on out to Reading, PA, that's a hoot and a holler away from where we are, and see some of those folks and be with some of those folks who would be delighted to see you and meet those folks at Berks Jazz and I get my friend from the Rehoboth Beach Jazz Festival come and just be with a bunch of folks who need to see you in this part of the world, because we really do hunger for your music. And if Brian O'Neill showed his face in a place like that, that would be the talk of Berks Jazz.
Just honestly. Show my face or actually perform?
To just be there, because if you're going to be there and somebody saw you, invariably you are going to get, like Gerald Beasley would be like chomping at the bit to get you to play at the jazz bass. So we'll have to do something. I'll have to talk to Gerald Beasley so you can play there. It would be just so cool to see you in this region of the world.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to be just all up and down the East Coast. It's been so tough to get booked out there. I don't know why, but we're going to change that this year, next year.
Well, we're all so snooty here.
Well, I don't think it's a snooty thing. It's more of a business cliquish.
Yep.
You know, if you've got a record deal, then that's... your chances are better, and it's a few little things, and I don't have those little things yet, but I'll be there.
Well, you've got a lot more. There are some beautiful people, honestly, Brian, in this neck of the woods, and in Philadelphia, my hometown, Baltimore, my adopted town, Washington, D.C., Virginia, this whole region up and down 95, they know your work apart from the music industry. So honestly, maybe those rules have changed, but there would be so many people willing to embrace whatever you're doing, because people already know that you're brilliant musically, and for you to have that extra, you are. for you to have the extra and what you do that is so phenomenal. Oh, my gosh. Just we'll have to keep in touch, Kelly and you and I, because doggone it, okay. I want you here so bad.
You're such a sweetheart, Trish.
No, you are. You are. And we'll make it happen. And I played this before. We've played a couple of songs. I've played Mesmerized, which is one of my favorite songs of all time, by the way.
Yeah, you told me that.
I know. But I want to play We Three Kings because that's one of the songs that you offer as a free download.
Yep. Sure do.
That's awesome. So I'm not do your thing. I know that you've probably had a few hours where you're glad handing and socializing and people are feeding you. You need to chill, and I'll let you go.
Okay, Trish. Thank you so much for this opportunity. You notice I had to whisper that back because you whispered.
I know.
But
and
thank
it's,
you
so
much. It's always a blast talking to you, either on the phone, on your show, on Facebook. I feel your spirit. I think I did the first time we met. And,
nice.
That's always a good thing when you can feel that from another person, even though we've never met physically.
Well, that time will come in this coming year, and there's going to be a lot that will be just beautiful coming from your heart and what your intent is, because God sees what you do, and it's just going to have this beautiful blossoming effect. You'll see.
I'm looking forward.
Good.
2013, here we come.
That's right.
Thank you, Trish.
That's right. Thanks. Thanks, Brian.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Brian O'Neill, we got to play this. We do. There's a couple of songs. Here's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to download all the songs that Brian offered because that would just be selfish. So this is the one that really grabbed me initially, so I want to play it again in case you didn't hear it the first time around during the show. Brian O'Neill and We Three Kings.
Christmas bells ring, people's hearts sing, and I forget about all the troubles I seem to have, and I tell myself to feel how my brother feels. Try to love him and maybe then I'll understand. Make a little room in our hearts. No heart too small.
Definitive songs that you need to hear a couple of times this holiday season. Luther Vandross, This is Christmas, from the CD that was unleashed back in 1995, and people didn't know what to make of it because, you know, there's, what, 7 originals on this and 3 classics, My Favorite Things, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and Oh Come All Ye Faithful, but the rest are originals, and it includes that song that Luther co-wrote with Richard Marx, Every Day, Every Christmas. Wait, Every Year, Every Christmas, right? And I couldn't have played that because that's just too overwhelming. But this song that you just heard, This is Christmas. Woo! Says so much. And Brian O'Neill, God bless his little heart. We Three Kings, there are 4 songs that as of last night were being offered as a free download. He doesn't have to do this. If you go to his Facebook page, and it's Brian O'Neill, and it's usually O apostrophe N-E-A-L. He just has the O next to the N, O'Neill. You go right to the Reverb Nation page, and there it is. You can just download them and get your holiday cheer on, all right? Oh, my gosh. Eight minutes left for the show, but look, I'm not going to stall for time. I'm just going to play my little music. And thank you to Daoud Saeed for allowing me to use his little custom beds that he made for me. his keyboard work. Maybe he and Brian O'Neill will get together one of these days and trade licks. That would be amusing. Oh, my. It would be wonderful, actually. Thank you to Griselda, to Beach, to Raven, to someone who's usually here, but Matt is being bombarded at work. He's got his little issues going on. Listen to the archives. Thank you so much to the guests. Have been floating back and forth. Thank you to Kelly Adolph for stopping by. She wanted to make sure Brian did his thing. Did he ever? What a wonderful time he spent with us talking about the Dew Foundation. And I will post information on my Facebook page. But if you look up anything about DO Foundation, you will see the work that has been accomplished. And what kind of work can be accomplished in 2013? It's up to us. We got to make it happen. We have to help Brian do his thing. No reason why we can't, right? No more excuses. Let's just do it. Thank you so much. God bless you. Have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a wonderful New Year, and we'll see you on the other side of 2013 with some wonderful guests. We couldn't have done it without you. Thank you to Blog Talk Radio, too, for everything. God bless. We'll see you.